The following is a special presentation of Mars Hill Church in Seattle. For more audio and video content, go to MarsHillChurch.org.
How we doing? Good to see you guys. Welcome to Mars Hill Church downtown. As Caleb said, my name is Tim, one of the pastors here. Hope you guys are doing well. We're going to be in Luke 20. You can go in there in your Bibles if you got them. If you don't got them, we've got some Bibles at the Connect desk you can have for free, or we'll have it right up here on the screen. Hope you guys had a good weekend. You guys get a chance to enjoy the Blue Angels? Hydros? Yes, yes, yes. My good friend Thor Tolo in the back, he rode in Fat Albert. Thor, I see you back there, man. Yeah, that was a good picture. And anyways, hope you guys, there's nothing better than Seafair weekend, you know? You got the Blue Angels, you got the Hydros, a lot of fun. So hope you guys enjoyed it, especially if you're new to Seattle. Always a good time. So author Ernest Becker, he said that self-worth is the condition of one's life. Starting very early in our life, he says that we pursue self-worth, that if we can somehow get honor through the things that we think we need to get that in, power, success, recognition, that we can, that is the thing that drives us as we look towards what does it make us, what makes us happy in our life. What are the dreams that we have? And so for us, we move on a self-salvation project when we're young, and it moves even into the rest of our life. I'm thinking about my daughter, almost two-year-old, Eleanor, who is hilarious and cute, and she started talking recently in the first person, and she'll do these hilarious antics, and she's very brave, actually. She jumps off like these 2-foot ledges, and she'll land it, and she'll be like, "Eleanor's," and say, "Hey, look at me, look for the atta girls," you know. And she went down the water slide for the first time by herself yesterday, and went down the water slide and comes out, and he's like, "Eleanor's." "Yes, good girl, good job," you know, and finishes her ABC puzzle, you know, gets it all done. "Eleanor's." Hilarious. Hilarious. And we see that for us, we begins young, we're looking for something that's going to make us whole. And we're looking for honor, and we're looking for worth. And we see that for us, this idea of self-focus is something that actually we think ends up being the dream that we're looking for, but it oftentimes turns into the greatest nightmare that we've got. Because when we realize at the end of that road, it never brings us that meaning or fulfillment that we're actually looking for in life. And here in our text tonight, Luke 20, if you haven't been here, or catch you up to speed real quick, this is the Wednesday of Passion Week. In 24 hours, Jesus is going to get arrested. 48 hours, he'll be crucified. He's been lobbying and taking questions from all these different groups of people. Jesus, what are your politics? Jesus, what do you believe in the afterlife? What are all these things that you believe in? In fact, last week we saw that he gave this invitation to all these folks coming that were questioning and doubting him. And where we see ourselves now, as Jesus now looks towards the cross, I mean, this is the last few hours of Jesus' life. And the rest of Luke 21, the rest of the chapter, we'll see this in ensuing weeks, that Jesus goes from the aspect of invitation, of like saying, "Here's who I am, come to me," to then saying, "You know what, here's what's coming." And he actually, in Luke 21, talks about judgment and destruction. And here in our text today, he actually paints this picture and gives us two vivid contrasts, two categories of people. One that brings condemnation and another that brings commendation. He says, for us, if you want to know what it is like to know Jesus and serve Jesus, he points us to this picture of this woman who is humble and generous and sacrificial, and says, if you want to know the opposite of what it means to know me, he points a picture to these men that are self-absorbed, self-focused. They're show-offs, they're cheats, they're fakes. And it's a real, for me, it was a very convicting time of study, and I believe for many of us will be a great time of seeing who Jesus is, what he's about, and his calling for us. And so we'll dive into this here in Luke 20, starting in verse 45. It says, "And in the hearing of all the people, he he said to his disciples, and this is, he only does this a few times where he draws his disciples in. He's like, okay, this is important. Huddle up. I got to tell you something. Let's go. He says, beware of the scribes who like to walk around in long robes and love greetings in the marketplaces, the best seats in the synagogues and the places of honor at feasts, who devour widows' houses and for a pretense make long prayers. They will receive the greater condemnation. Jesus looked up and saw the rich putting their gifts into the offering box, and he saw a poor widow put in two small copper coins. And he said, truly, I tell you, this poor widow has put in more than all of them, for they all contributed out of their abundance, but she, out of her poverty, put in all she had to live on. Jesus draws this picture. He gives us two lessons here. The first is where we will receive condemnation if we don't know Christ, and that's what I would say, how to be less impressive than you are. This is what he says, the first category of people, how to be less impressive than you are, and he gives us a couple ways that we can be less impressive than we are. And the first thing he says is how to live for the love of the crowd. Live for the love of the crowd. And he says, talks about the scribes here, these guys that wrote down the law. They like to walk around in long robes, love greetings in the marketplaces. These guys, robes in that time, that was a signature of status, of influence. Today, you don't really see a lot of people walking around in robes unless you have a bunch of Star Wars friends, you know, that are in Star Wars. But unless, if you don't have that, you're not going to see that a lot. But back then, it was like these guys walking around in robes, and it's like, man, okay, they're somebody, okay? They've got some sort of power. They have some sort of status. I mean, is that an Armani robe? What is that? And you would see that they would walk around, and they love to be noticed in their robes, and they love the attention that it would get walking around. And for us today, there's a parallel to that, because we know that for many of us, that's a closer, it's a signifier of the sort of status that we have, kind of maybe the group or the crew that we run in, and it's a way of kind of drawing attention to ourselves in a way that shows, here's who I am, here's my status. And I saw this week when I actually went into a few different neighborhoods, had a few different things going on, and how in each neighborhood, it's actually a little bit different. I was up in Capitol Hill this week, and up on Capitol Hill, it's, you know, get people that wear, you know, cut off jean shorts that cut off blood supply, you know, like that's kind of a, you know, a signifier with a really tight tank top on and a wool hat on, especially if it's like 80 degrees plus, then you got to definitely have the hat on. And then I went down to Rainier Valley, and in Rainier Valley, it's actually jean shorts, but that are five sizes too big. And some Timberlands and some Tims, if you know what Tims are. And then I actually had a meeting at City Hall, and it was a warm day, and so I had flip-flops and a t-shirt on, and I'm sitting in this reception room in City Hall, and I'm looking around, and everyone in this reception room was suited up, you know, tie, coat, wingtips, polished. And I'm like, I look like a total idiot right now. I look like just a fool, because these guys are probably looking at me like, okay, who's this guy? He's coming in. I mean, he obviously isn't very important. Obviously needs to go change his clothes. And gosh, somebody get somebody in here that knows what they're doing. I just kind of had this sense of like, okay, note to self. Next time I come down, you make sure to wear shoes that have laces and a shirt that has buttons on it. And I just felt like an idiot there and thinking, man, next time I'm down here, I need to be able to kind of look a little more important, at least that I have a clue of what I'm doing. Maybe a look like you got a PowerPoint or something, right? And I realized I took that mental inventory of myself, thinking, man, there's something wrong about what I'm doing here. And I felt very, very self-conscious about what I was wearing. And it reminded me that this is what the scribes, they love to draw attention to themselves. In fact, today I think a better example might be they're like the Bluetooth guys. You know the guy with the Bluetooth, right? And there was a guy in that reception room, and it reminded me of this, that, you know, had a Bluetooth on, and he was changing the whole world with his Bluetooth, and he was letting everybody know how important he was with his Bluetooth, because, I mean, he apparently didn't think anyone could hear him, right? So he wanted to make sure we heard him. And he was making a lot of sales at the time. I mean, I could hear him. And checking a lot of inventory. Hey, did you make that sale? Yeah, make that sale. Check the inventory. Ship it. Send it. Buy it. Sold. Done. All right, next. Ship. Send. Buy. It's like, okay, really? Like, come on, are you serious, man? And then that, and then that's the guy that goes to your fitness center and does the same thing. I don't know if you ever been to the gym, and that's the guy like on the bike, right? And he's on his Bluetooth on the bike. If you're that guy, you need to just stop right away. Just stop it. You're annoying, okay? Like Bluetooth on the treadmill or on the bike, and you're like telling everybody what you're doing. That's annoying. So stop it. That's what the scribes did. They had Bluetooth in. And they loved to tell everybody what they were up to. They loved to be recognized. It says they love greetings in the marketplaces, okay? Now, this wasn't just like a, hey, how's it going, man? This is like they loved having people notice them. They loved being seen and seeing others. They, oh, master, teacher, rabbi, oh, my goodness, how are you today? I mean, they gloated in that and loved that. It's like a buddy of mine who wanted me to start calling him doctor. You know, I got my degree. Can you start calling me doctor now? Like, dude, it's an honorary degree. You didn't even earn it. Like, are you kidding me? No, I'm not calling you doctor. You know, and but these guys, they just love the titles. Now, there's nothing wrong with titles because, you know, that master, teacher, rabbi was a sign of honor and respect, but that's what they lived for. They lived for that. They just loved that, and they took that in. How are these guys to be seen and see others? Second thing Jesus says here is to be less impressive than you think you are is to be sure of your significance. To be sure of your significance. It says in verse 46, the last part of it, it says, they had the best seats in the synagogues and the places of honor at feasts. Now, back then in synagogues, of course, the way that they had it set up is that they had in the front, they would have these great seats of honor and respect for this reserved for the scribes, and they would come there and they would sit there and have the best seats in the house, and they would love people having them seen with the best seats in the house. There's something that just was able to, you know, boost them up, give them some pride in the fact that they had the best seats in the house. Unlike there's some churches, and not as many today, but and I've seen churches like this where you have like the platform, and on the stage you got the huge, you know, ornate chair with like eagles and stuff on it, right? And like, you know, the pastor would just sit there during the service and kind of looking at the crowd like this. I mean, how awkward is this if I just sat here the rest of the time? How's it going, everybody? You know? I mean, that's just weird, right? But that's what they love to do. They love to be able to have the center of attention. They're attention grabbers. That's what they love. Now, for us, the best seats in the house aren't in the front, are they? They're in the back, right? Those are the best seats. In fact, you notice the front row, it's totally empty because it's the row of shame and disgrace. You know, no one wants to sit in the front row. But I tell you, if you did, there's some advantages because you might get spat upon. You could see if my clothes match. I mean, there's advantages. But I tell you what, we had someone that you could actually honor someone and sit in the front row and say, hey, I'm going to honor the rest of people because I know that this is not the row that everyone loves to sit in. It's the front. But you could do that. In fact, we had someone do that earlier this morning. Someone came in and they specifically sat in the front row. I thought that was very kind of them to do that. But that's what these scribes love to do. They love to be the center of attention, and said they love the place of honor at the feasts. Place of honor at the feast, where this is like the big party, right? They've got the paparazzi's out, so to speak, the red carpet, you know, big party in the center of town. Or it's like it reminded me of, Thanksgiving with my family. When, you have all these, we had a big family, a lot of different tables, right? And you know, one long tablecloth, but different kinds of tables. Like you had the first table, which is like that was the dining room table, carved wood, you know, high back chairs, comfortable, like a nice table. And people that sat at the table could complete sentences. You know, I mean, it was a good table to sit at. And then the next one was the card table. The card table. I mean, wobbly. You know, the legs were always different sizes. It wobbled and a lot of drooling happened at that table. And then the next one over wasn't even a table, but, you know, we'd always run out of place and, you know, they'd say, hey, bring over like the music stands, you know, and you get a music stand, you know, And you had to put your food on a music stand, and then it would fall over. And I was the youngest of four, relegated to the kids' table, and I couldn't wait to, you know, to just be at the table where people could complete sentences. I mean, it was something that I longed for and looked for. And, you know, you've made it, you've arrived. And that was something that these scribes could not wait to get to that place where they could be the place of honor. Now, here's Christianity, the Bible, it says you need to count others as more important than yourself. And in thinking about this, you know, I've done a number of weddings this summer, and, you know, thinking about at a wedding, when you have a reception and you've got a table that's up front and it's for the bride and groom, right? Pretty much everybody, unless you've lost it, knows that when you come in, that is not for you, right? That's the best seat in the house, but it's not for you. Okay, this is the place of honor. It's for the significant people of the day, and you're insignificant on this day. Okay? Now, I know you showed up, you're like the third cousin removed of like one of the bridesmaids, right? And you just wanted crab cakes and you showed up, right? But it's not your day. Okay? It's for someone else. You have the social sense to know that. But here's the thing. That's what Christianity is. That's what the Christian life is. It's understanding that you give deference to someone else. It's understanding that it's not for you. You show others as more important than yourself. Now, the thing about the best seats is that, you know, the scribes, what they loved more than just having the best seats, like with the best view, was telling others that they had the best seats. Hey, did you see the seats I had? Hey, you see those? They're putting up, you know, they're like putting it on their Facebook statuses, or, you know, taking a picture, letting everyone else know the great seats. Hey, did you see the seats I got? Yeah. And they love doing that. They love doing that. Now, there's something that we do in our hearts and in our lives. Sometimes we know it, sometimes we don't know it, but we keep sort of a mental calculation, a social calculation of who we are and what we've done and where we stack up. And we know, okay, we can see across the spectrum of the things that we've done. School and athletics, achievements, influence, looks. Like, we've done the calculation. We know where we stack up. And so, and then we like to play that compare game. Okay, I stack up. Yeah, I feel better about myself when I compare myself to this person, or I feel worse about myself if I compare myself to this person. And there's a sort of calculation that happens that oftentimes we don't even talk about. And again, going back to my daughter, this whole thing kind of calculation starts young. In fact, I saw this recently. My nephew, 7 years old, plays soccer. He's hanging out with his buddies. I'm talking with him after the soccer game, telling me about the game. One of his teammates, friends, comes up. He's like, hey, I scored a goal. It's like, man, that's awesome. Way to go. You know, and then one of his other buddies is like, hey, I scored 2 goals. Hey, that's great. Good job. Great job. And you can see one of his other friends just kind of stewing a little bit, you know, just kind of thinking of like, okay, I gotta one-up these guys somehow, right? And he's like, hey, I scored 3 goals and 1 from a corner kick. Really? Corner kick, huh? You're 7. That's a big field. You can't even kick it that far. I'm like, well, it's probably on video, right? Like, that'd be pretty cool to see it on video. We should go watch it. Your dad videos your games. Oh, well, he didn't get a chance to video that one. And oh, really? How come? Because he's like, well, he wasn't there. I'm like, well, I thought he was one of your coaches, you know, just to show up. Oh, well, you know, I don't, you're trailing off there, buddy. Is that a Niner? What is that? You know, and you just see that for us, and we can do this, we can do this often in our life where we look to elevate ourselves, to be sure of our significance, and we may exaggerate a bit. You think of the times that you've exaggerated a story. You've exaggerated something you've done, somewhere you've been, in a story, an insignificant story, right? That's got no bearing on anything, and yet you exaggerated it slightly, not a lot, so you didn't look like an idiot, but just a little bit, to make it look better so that you could elevate yourself a little bit over whomever you wanted to in your mind. And that's what we do. We like to talk about who we know, connections, influence, and Christianity is really the opposite of seeking honor, right? Because that's what the world says, seek your honor. And it's pretty clear that that's what it says. So they're not hiding that, right? Seek your honor. I've been watching a lot of Sesame Street recently, and the Google Dolls were just on. It must have been a late episode, because there's no way the Google Dolls would have been on right now, because they're way 90s. But they were on. I saw some old video of the Google Dolls in Sesame Street singing with Elmo, and they're singing, and they changed their tune to that one hit song they had. It goes, why don't you, how does that go? Slide. Is that it? Why don't you slide, you know? But they changed it to Pride. And Elmo is singing along with the Google Dolls, singing, teaching all the kids, make sure you have your pride, you know? Have your pride, you know? And I'm like, all right, turn that one off, you know? But that's what we do, to seek our honor. That's what the world says. Seek honor, not give honor. Not count others as more important than yourselves. Count yourself as more important than anything. Christianity is a total upside down view. The third thing Jesus says here is how to be less impressive than you think you are is to be a spiritual fraud. Is to be a spiritual fraud. He says in verse 47, these scribes, they devoured widows' houses and for a pretense make long prayers. They devoured widows' houses. They used people in vulnerable situations for their own gain. For their own gain. Not only did they look for their own honor, but they used God for their own gain. They used the name of God. Okay, the name of God is going to allow me to get more success and wealth and influence. And so I'm going to use the name of God to do that. The things we see here in our culture today, people that are abused and scammed are the elderly. And we see this. There's stories about this all the time. The elderly getting scammed and bilked. I was actually just watching, I don't know why I was. It made me seriously want to vomit. But I was watching some Christian television the other day. And, oh, man, I'll tell you what. There's this guy on there. He's talking about how the end of the world's coming. He's like, put your hands on the TV screen. Touch the screen. Touch the screen. Touch the screen, you know. Touch it, you know. I'm like, I don't want to get my fingerprints on it, you know. Touch it. Do it. And he's like, if you give me $1,000 now, I will send you water from the River Jordan. And it's anointed. I was like, wow, where's my checkbook, you know? And he goes, if you act in the next 30 minutes, if you act, I will throw in an eagle pendant with our logo on it. I didn't know whether to just drive wherever this guy was and punch him or like just laugh. I mean, it was just like, oh yeah, an eagle pendant, right? But here's what Jesus hates more than anything, people who are spiritual fakes, who try to bilk people out of their money, and people that pretend to care about people's souls but only want their money. Spiritual fakes. Now, a fake, a hypocrite, is not the person who does the right thing even though they don't feel like doing it. That's not a fake. Someone who does the right thing even though they don't feel like doing it. That's called growing up. That's called maturing, okay? There's a lot of things we don't like doing. Even, it's like raising kids, you know? They're not feeling like doing things all the time, but you know what? You got to do it, okay? It's growing up. Or a relationship with Jesus. Reading the Bible, singing songs, giving, going to community group, A lot of times we don't feel like it, but it's called faithfulness. It's called faithfulness. And in that, God will work. Marriage. Not all the time I'm feeling like loving my wife, leading well, talking. Surprising, huh? But to be a faithful husband, that's what I'm called to do. The fake is someone who is trying to fool people to believe they're something they're not. The fake is someone who's trying to fool people to believe there's something they're not. Instead of just being honest about it, like, man, I'm not feeling like it. Here's where my heart. The fake is like just putting on the face, putting on the mask, trying to, you know, be very impressive. And that's what these guys did. They said their long prayers, pretentious long prayers. And they wanted to look and be spiritually impressive. The question for us is, when we pray, are we more concerned about others hearing us or having God respond? We're having God respond. See, so often if you are more concerned about having others view you as spiritually impressive or you can be spiritually respective, we get into a cycle of living in a prison of fear and anxiety because we've moved into a life of complete and total people-pleasing, which then just leads to that manipulation, that exaggeration, putting on the face, being the fake, the phony that these scribes were. And it leads to that life of fear and anxiety because you end up leaving conversations after you said something, you prayed, you're a community group or whatever it is, you leave and you're like, man, I wonder how they took that. I wonder how they viewed me. I wonder how they looked at me. I wonder. And you lay in bed at night and it's hard to shut off your mind because you're always wondering what they thought of you, how you said that, how you looked, and everything is the self-focus. And you're way more concerned about that than your relationship with God and knowing and loving and serving Him. Are you more interested in being spiritually impressive? And this can happen for those of you that are parents, this can happen parenting. Like, oh man, how am I doing as a parent? How do other people view me as a parent? Are my children obeying? Oh man, they're acting out. Oh my gosh, what are they thinking about me now? More concerned about that than concerned about being a faithful parent. And Jesus is just laying this groundwork, saying, man, there's such a huge difference between self-forgetfulness and self-absorption. And it reminds me of in Revelation, the seven churches, the church of Sardis, it says they had a reputation for being alive, but inside we're dead. They had a reputation for being alive, but inside we're dead. And my hope, my prayer for us as a community, as a church, as individuals, is that, man, we don't have a reputation for being alive, but inside are dead. And we're not being open and honest about it. And we just continue to live just trying to put up a good face and be impressive. And all of this, man, it just really reminds me of, there's a verse in 2 Chronicles, King Uzziah. King Uzziah was a king, and he started off great and did some great things, and he started off humble and started off really depending on God. And then there's a poignant, prophetic verse in 2 Chronicles 26, talking about King Uzziah. It says, in Jerusalem, he made engines invented by skillful men to be on the towers and the corners, to shoot arrows and great stones. And his fame spread far, for he was marvelously helped till he was strong. He was helped. He depended on God. He understood who he was until he became strong. But when he was strong, he grew proud to his destruction. Man, I think this plays out so often for our society, for some of us. And we see this, athletes, musicians, businessmen, businesswomen, pastors, families, churches. I was reading the account of Bernie Madoff. He had that $80 billion Ponzi scheme in New York City. And he was talking about, he had no intent of ever getting to that place. I mean, that wasn't the intent going in. In fact, he said early on he made a couple bad investment decisions that cost the people a little bit of money. But instead of just coming clean and just saying, hey, man, I made some bad mistakes, some investment decisions, I'm going to have to get this to you. He said, my pride would not allow me to come clean and admit that I made a couple bad decisions. So I just had to go kind of clean it up and make it look good and try to come back around and try to get them money a little bit later down the road. And that decision to not come clean, that decision to not come to the end of himself because he was too proud to admit he had made a mistake, led to years and years of this Ponzi scheme. Just one little decision, all of a sudden, it goes on top of the other decisions, and now all of a sudden, this $80 billion mess he's in. And so often, we can live that out, not wanting to come clean, not wanting to just be honest and understand that there was a time that we need help. And sometimes things go well and we get proud and it comes at our own destruction. And, you know, here in Seattle, maybe some of you, and we get a lot of people that are moving here and coming here. Seattle has, over the last 20, 30 years, has turned into this amazing world-class city. A lot of wealth and influence and power. I mean, 50 years ago, man, you know, you look back on pictures, it has grown tremendously. And you think of all of the areas that we have influence in the world, you know, retail and aerospace, technology, coffee, retail, arts, culture, music. I mean, there's a ton of things that, and people come here for many of those things, to achieve their dreams, to do something, and to gain some of that power, success, or recognition that we're looking for. And could it be that path in your life, the things that you're searching for, that has led to the reason that maybe things are falling apart or might fall apart? You know, we look at what pride is, and pride is faith in the idea that God had when he made you. Pride is faith in the idea that God had when he made you. And, you know, pride, and in particular spiritual pride, it looks around, it looks at life, it looks at all the things in life and says, I did it. I did it by my power. And I'm doing it for my glory, for my honor. I did it and I'm doing it by me, for me. I worked harder, I worked smarter, more efficiently. And so what happens with pride is that we think that we deserve it. And so pride brings this deep, deep sense of entitlement and owedness. I did this, I deserve this. And it works when things are going well and when things are going not so well. When things are going well, you know, you're getting good things, and it's like, well, hey, I worked harder, I worked smarter, I deserve it. And when things maybe aren't going so well, and you're suffering, and we say, man, that's not fair. I don't deserve that. I'm owed this instead of that. So pride claims to be an author of what clearly is a gift. Claims to be an author of what clearly is a gift. On the flip side of that, humility, someone that's humble understands that life is a gift. Life is a gift. The things that we have, the things that we've received, the things that we've been given. And I know that for some of you here tonight that I lived full-blown in this cycle before I understood and was freed from this life of self-absorption. I still struggle with it, no question. But there's many, I think, here that believe that, you know, you're the captain of your soul. You know, you're, in terms of you're the captain of this life, you're in control, you have the authority, you're in charge. But I'd ask you, how much of your life is really under your control? How much of your life is really under your control? Because when you really get down to it, most of your life was never, you didn't have a hand in. You didn't have a hand in your race, your gender, the century that you were born in, the location that you were born in. And you think, man, if you were born in another time, another place, you don't think things might look a little bit different for you? Born in 14th century Europe during the bubonic plague, or we'll name a million things in terms of different places, different times, things would look different. It would have an impact on who you are today. And you may say, I've worked hard. Yeah, but with what? With what? The mind, the talent, the gift, the abilities that God and God alone gave you. You think about how much of, you know, educators talk about our early childhood, you know, is so formative for us and who we become. And even your early childhood, you didn't choose your parents or your siblings. And most of your early childhood, you had no part in terms of controlling. And all of this just reminds me of 1 Corinthians 4, verse 6. Paul says, I've applied all these things to myself and Apollos for your benefit. Brothers, that you may learn by us not to go beyond what's written, that none of you may be puffed up in favor of one against another. For who sees anything different in you? What do you have that you did not receive? If then you received it, why do you boast as if you did not receive it? A miserable life is one that is lived with a sense of entitlement or owedness. And I know this from experience because, you know, and I think of just the remnants of this in my life and how this shows up. I mean, just not that long ago, Brittany and I, my wife, we had an executive elders campus pastors retreat up in Suncadia. And after a long season, looking forward a couple days away, rest, and we went to check in. We were early. Check-in wasn't until 4. And, of course, I'm sure they're going to have a room, let us in, and went up to the front desk and looking to check in early. We're sorry, we can't get you in. I'm like, really? There's nothing you can do? No, we're sorry. Really? Seriously? And I gave like this, you're out of your mind, do you know who I am type look. And it was not good. We walked away, and my wife got in the car, and she's like, she just said very frankly to me, she's like, there's something that you have in you that feels like you're so entitled to what you want. You have this sense of entitlement. And it was just an arrow to my heart. Because it's like, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Thinking that this is the way it should go. This is what I deserve. This is what I'm owed. And it's been a long, hard season. Get some time off. And you see how that can lead to not enjoying things. Not enjoying God's good gifts that he gives to us. Because we might get something that's good that God gives. And then it's like, well, okay, yeah, that should have happened a couple years ago. But okay. I'll take it. And oftentimes we can't even enjoy it. And then if something doesn't come to us, then we become bitter. And we feel like something was owed to us. And Jesus here, he's like, okay, here's the deal. I don't want you to live a miserable life, okay, where you feel like you're just owed and entitled. A life of self-absorption and self-focus, because that's life of condemnation, a life of commendation where you're freed and you're liberated and you have life looks like this. And he says in 21:1, Jesus looked up and saw the rich putting their gifts into the offering box, and he saw a poor widow putting in 2 small copper coins. He said, truly I tell you, this poor widow has put in more than all of them, for they all contributed out of their abundance, but she out of her poverty put in all she had to live on. these copper coins. It was a lepta. It was like, if you remember a couple weeks ago, a denarius, it's a day's wage. This is like 1/10 of a denarius. This is 20 cents. Okay? This woman came in and gave 20 cents, all that she had to live on. And we have this picture, this image of someone who understands, who gets what it looks like and what it means to be freed up and liberated. Say, everything I have is God's. My money, my talent, everything, my 20 cents. Some will say, well, gosh, that's not fiscally responsible. Like, that's, you're only 20 cents. What are you going to do? And the idea that Jesus is getting at here, and it's what John Calvin talked about, and he says, the chief sacrifice God is looking for from us is self-denial. Is self-denial. Jesus earlier said, to gain life, you have to lose your life. You have to lose your life. You have to understand what it means, what it looks like to know me and follow me. That's why he said to the rich man, go sell everything. Go sell all your possessions and follow me. He's like, I can't do it. He's not always saying that to us, right? Not always just saying, hey, but can you? Can you surrender yourself? Can you give your life? Because that's the difference between self-forgetfulness and self-absorption. Because the kingdom of God, the gospel, is for those who are meek and humble. That's why it said about Jesus, he came not to be served, but to serve. It's that upside down view. And for us that we say it's about me, we can't admit our mistakes, we can't admit our condition, we think everything is for us and we're owed everything, then we don't understand the gospel. Because the gospel is, I deserve this, but I get this. The gospel is, man, here's what I've done, but here's what Jesus gives me. And we can only receive that through humility and meekness. You know, it's not thinking less of yourself, it's thinking about yourself less. You know, all of us, we've got this tumor of sin that eats away and kills us. And when we become a Christian, the Holy Spirit comes into our life and serves as this cosmic radiation that begins to shrink that tumor of sin, that self-absorption, the focus that we have. It's not that it just totally goes away, but we start to become less of a jerk and less arrogant and less proud, and God works in our lives. And we see here that Jesus commended this woman and commended her generosity. 20 cents. The rich guys, man, they might have given, who knows how much they gave, but 20 cents. And we see that Jesus is interested in your heart. He's interested in the giver, not necessarily the gift. She was generous because of what it cost her. She was generous because of what it cost her. And that looks different for all of us, right? For some of you, you might fall into this category. For others, it looks different. And I think it shows that all of us can be generous in here, right? This woman, 20 cents, generous. All of this comes down to this amazing picture of who Jesus is. In fact, we see the gospel in here because it's really a pointer to Jesus. Look at verse 4 in closing. It says that this woman put in all she had. She put in all she had. This is a pointer to Jesus. Jesus left everything. He became penniless, homeless. He was put on a cross. He was beaten and he mocked. He put in all he had. He put it all in. And he lost control. So we love to be in control. Jesus lost control, just like this widow put in all she had. She lost control and put her trust in God. Because Jesus lost control for you. Jesus took it for you. He took everything. All the moments, all the times, every moment that we are just pursuing our own glory, went on the cross of Christ, and Jesus says, come to me. I will free you. I will liberate you. I will get you out of that miserable life. Don't end up like every Behind the Music episode that you see, right? That just always stands out to me because it's like we pursue some sort of power, success, or recognition. It's like those are always, every episode's the same thing, right? It never brings you the type of life you had. And you talk to the most important, powerful people in the world that have more than anybody, and they will always say the same thing. It never brings what we're looking for. Jesus Christ came. He gave us a gift. He gave us himself. And I pray as we close tonight that you would meet him, you would know him. If you're not a Christian, that you would give your life to him. Ask your question, am I more concerned about looking good? Am I more concerned about getting the attaboys or the attagirls? What am I concerned about? Or am I concerned as Jesus comes in my life about serving, loving others? And our heart as a people, as a community, is to serve our city, is to serve one another. And I pray that we would do that. I pray that this would open our hearts to see our sin, number one, not be like Bernie Madoff, but admit it, that we're all sinners. We're all broken. We all need the grace that Jesus tonight is offering to each of us. Receive that grace tonight as we come to communion. It's for Christians. Give your life to him. Partake of the bread, which is his broken body, the wine, blood being shed. Receive grace. We need it. We're also going to receive our offering. Our financial stewards are going to come forward. An opportunity to give, to worship God, the things he's given to us. An opportunity to repent and be generous tonight. The band's going to come out. We're going to sing. We're going to celebrate. We're going to give tithes and offerings and take communion. Amen?